Welcome to the Investor Mama Podcast, Money Conversations with a Mom's Touch. Your host, Jen Narciso, interviews amazing guests each week to help you become educated, be inspired by other money stories, and stay motivated on your own wealth-building journey. No matter where you are financially, whether you're in debt or financially free, this podcast is for you. Now sit back and enjoy.
Welcome back to the Investor Mama Podcast, Money Conversations with a Mom's Touch. I'm your host, Jen Narciso, and I hope you are having a wonderful week. Today's episode is amazing. I have the pleasure of interviewing Tori Dunlop. If you don't know her, she is famous for her first 100K. She reached 100K at 25 years old. She's been featured on the Today Show, Good Morning America, BBC, People, CNBC, Forbes, Yahoo, The Guardian, New York Times. I mean, she is everywhere. She is so awesome. Tori even recently launched her own podcast called The Financial Feminist. It's the number one top business podcast out there on Apple. You could totally go check it out. I'll put a link to it in the show notes. She even beats out The Ramsey Show, which is awesome to have female representation at the top of the charts. So again, I'll put a link to that in the show notes as well. And what we dive into is how to get raises, how to know your worth. And what we really talk about is, so on the Investor Mom podcast, so far I've released a lot of episodes on real estate and businesses and just investing side, but not everyone wants to start a business or not everyone wants to go into real estate, but they still want to increase their income. And so for those of you who like your W-2 job or like working in the field of profession you're in, that's amazing. And you should continue to do that. But make sure you're getting paid adequately for what your worth is. And Tori guides you literally on getting paid what you're worth. And if you're not, to give you the confidence that, hey, you can do it. There's another job out there that's for you. All the benefits you think are great with this current job may not be as great as you think it is, and you are worth it, and go after it. And so this episode was so awesome. It was so much fun. I really enjoyed talking to her. I think you're going to really like it. And I highly encourage you to check out Tori's content. She's really big on Instagram. It's amazing. And so without further ado, Tori, welcome to the show. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks for coming on. I'm really excited to interview you.
Yeah, I'm excited to be here. It's so funny hearing every time I hear an intro, I'm just like, oh man. Yeah, it has been a crazy year or two.
Awesome. Why don't we begin with actually your money story, for how you got started?
Sure. Yeah. So I actually started my first business when I was 9 years old. So I owned 15 vending machines by the time I graduated high school, the kind where you put a quarter in, you get a handful of candy out. And all of the profits from that business went to my college fund. And so I really learned how to run a business. I learned a profit and loss statement. I learned how to pitch myself. I learned how to manage money and opened up my first checking and savings account when I was 10 years old and just had a really great financial foundation. And then later sold that business after 11 years to a 10-year-old who also happens to be named Tori, because that's how this crazy world works. But when I graduated high school and even college, I knew the business thing was rare, right? I knew that wasn't normal, but I thought, okay, everybody knows not to overspend on credit cards and everybody knows how to budget and everybody knows how to negotiate. And of course, I realized very quickly that that was not the case. And especially for women, we are at a severe disadvantage when it comes to our financial education and resources. And so I believe I was put on this earth to fight for women's financial rights and to really give them the tools and the actionable strategies they need to not only make money, but to learn how to keep and grow it.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. And for a lot of my listeners out there are moms. So I'm just curious of what your parents did to actually instill this type of mindset, because this is not normal. The way you speak, yeah. You're so confident in how you speak and how you talk and how you act. You started businesses at such a young age. For a mom out there or parents out there who have children and want to create the same type of mindset, what would you recommend they do?
I get asked this question a lot. My parents were really great about not just talking the talk, but walking the walk. So they didn't just tell me, you know, don't ever spend on credit cards again, or, you know, here, save money, it's important. They showed me. So I watched my mom 2 times a month. She still does this. On the 13th and the 21st of every month, she would sit down and pay their bills and balance their checkbook. She uses Quicken from like 98, which you don't have to do, but like I saw her do that. I saw my dad negotiate our cable bill pretty much once a month. He would call and negotiate our bill down. And so I saw him do that. I saw them be really frugal with money. I saw them maybe want to move into a bigger house, but then realize that they didn't really need it. You know, I saw them be really financially responsible. And so they weren't just telling me to be good with money. They were showing me how to be good with money. And then I think from a young age, they brought me into a conversation that a lot of young girls are not being brought into. Statistically speaking, in a heteronormative relationship, a woman is probably handling the day-to-day finances. She's handling budgeting and maybe coupon clipping and grocery shopping and that sort of thing. As important as those things are, those are not the things that build wealth, right? Building wealth comes from investing, comes from good big picture decisions like buying a house or buying a car or buying a potential rental property. It comes from these really, really big decisions and these big moves, maybe switching your job so you get paid more and negotiating your pay, right? And these are things that most men are taught how to do. They're taught how to be self-sufficient. They're taught how to advocate for themselves. And growing up, right, we give little boys Legos and trucks and ways that they can be creative and self-sufficient. And we often give girls Barbies or dolls or wedding veils. And we're told as women from a very young age, as girls, that our self-worth is tied in what we can give to others, right? And I was lucky enough to be brought up by parents who gave me the financial education that every person should have regardless of gender. So my dad was teaching me about investing. He was teaching me how to be an entrepreneur and how to be a business owner. Yeah, he was showing me how to pitch myself. And I have a theater background as well. And that's all theater is, right? Is auditioning a million times and getting told 99 no's for one yes. And so I think what you can really do if you have children out there is, of course, not only talk about money, but show your children how to be good with money. And if you have girls, don't just teach them how to clip coupons, teach them how to build wealth.
What example do you think that your parents did set specifically that really stands out to you that when looking back, you may consider as a defining moment of that would help you on your financial journey now? Is there anything from your youth that you could really pinpoint that got you that type of mindset?
I mean, my dad and I are investing partners. Like, I will literally call and we'll sit on the phone for an hour and talk about different ETFs, and we'll talk about different strategies around Roth IRAs. And so I opened up my Roth IRA when I was 21, when I was making a full-time income, and maxed it out every year since. So I would say investing was the big thing. I will be able to retire, maybe even retire early, because I started investing so early. And when we think about the statistic that 45% of Americans 55 or over have nothing saved for retirement, we need to be having these conversations about how to invest and how to get over the fear of doing investing wrong. And we need to start having them now.
So besides the Roth IRA, was there anything else that you did that specifically got you to 100K at 25 years old?
Yeah, so there was a lot of pieces of that puzzle. So yeah, I started investing early. That was one of the big pieces. The second piece was I always had a side hustle. So I would save over 25% of my take-home pay from my 9-to-5. And then I also earned a bunch of money side hustling that after taxes and expenses could immediately go into savings. So not only was I saving a portion of my day job income, I was also saving pretty much all of my side hustle earnings, which helped catapult me to 100K. I also focused on automatically saving. I put my savings on autopilot, so I didn't have to think about it. I paid myself first before I purchased anything. Even before I wrote my rent check every month, I was paying myself first. And then the kind of last piece of my story that I like to acknowledge is that I did graduate college debt free. And that was through me working 3 on-campus jobs while going to school full time. It was me working jobs during my breaks, my Christmas and summer breaks. It was tens of thousands of dollars of merit scholarships that I earned. And it was also my parents financially being able to contribute a little bit of money. So it was very much a collaborative process. They didn't just hand me a check and were like, hey, go have fun. But it is something I'd like to acknowledge, is that I did have parents who were in a financial position where they were committed to being able to financially contribute a bit to my college fund as well.
What kind of side hustles did you do? Because it sounds like what your story did, you did a lot. You are a hustler, and that is so evident. But one takeaway that I think is so important for you, especially if you're a mom out there and you want to start your kids right, is that the younger you can start your kids, open up a Roth IRA for them. You can't do it until they're starting working, but the earlier you can start investing for them in low-cost index funds, it doesn't have to be complex. And if you don't know, an index fund is essentially like a mutual fund. It's a bunch of stocks or bonds, depending what it's tracking, but can track the S&P 500, which are the top 500 companies. So think like your Googles, your Netflix, Amazon, all those big companies. And they usually have lower expenses and lower fees, but it's great because you're not investing in one individual stock, you're investing in thousands and thousands of stocks, depending on what index you're actually tracking. just as a little side note. And anyone can do it. It's not some crazy insurmountable, like even real estate. I love real estate, but I know real estate isn't for everyone. Or, you know, it's not that you need to pick the right stock every year or you need to do all these things. It's just the earlier you start, the better. And I think, Tori, you are a living proof of that. And it's just, it's really great.
And I will say anybody can do what I did, but I have to fully acknowledge that I had a lot of privileges that a lot of people don't have. I am a white cisgendered woman who grew up in a middle, maybe even upper middle class background with parents who were really frugally financially responsible and who passed that on to me. I understand that that is an insane mm-hmm. privilege. And with that privilege, I believe I have a responsibility now to spread that knowledge and to spread what I know, right? And that's what I'm doing. That's what her first 100K is. But as far as what I did in side hustling, so I worked for almost 5 years in marketing. That was my day job. Is I was a social media marketer and a brand strategist. And when I first started side hustling, I basically did what I did in my full-time job just on the side for contractor freelance clients. So I would do social media during my day job, and then I would come home and do social media on my nights and weekends. And then as I started realizing that, you know, financial education, especially for women, is severely lacking, I started a blog, started a platform where I was talking more and more about money and career that eventually turned into her first 100K. And so her first 100K now is my full-time job. That is my full-time gig. I grew my side hustle on the side of my 9-to-5 for 3 years before I felt confident enough to quit my day job and go all in.
So I love that you bring up a really good point that being privileged in America, it exists whether people want to admit it or not. And so I know that you've spoken a lot about negotiating, and I'd love for you to talk about if there are people who may not have access to the same type of education or financial education, just to kind of talk a little bit about her first 100K and how you help women with negotiating their salaries and negotiating other options.
Yeah. So I am a money coach and speaker. So pretty much anything that money touches, I can walk you through. So whether that's credit scores, budgeting, saving, investing, negotiating, paying off debt, all of that is things I cover both in my workshops as well as my coaching and in different speaking engagements. So one of the things I've kind of been known for now in the personal finance community is my expertise in negotiating salaries and negotiating raises. So I successfully negotiated at least 10% in every job I've ever held. And I literally, before you and I jumped on this call, I worked in private coaching with this woman. My negotiation coaching sessions are typically a couple $100s, and we coach for an hour, and then you get me and access to me throughout the entire process of the negotiation. So that's kind of unique. But she literally turned, I think, probably a $250, $300 coaching session. She just negotiated $50,000 more.
Wow, that is $50,000
more. 50, absolutely amazing. And obviously that's not guaranteed, but I literally have this happens every week. Like I get a woman that I've, you know, helped negotiate who has successfully negotiated $2,000 or a $7,000 signing bonus or $12,000, or like this woman, she literally DM'd me last week and was like, hey, we just got like 25K more. And I was like, that's amazing. And then she just messaged me today and goes, you will not believe this. I just got another offer that I was able to leverage. So I just got more money plus another signing bonus. Like, that's insane. So yeah, I coach about everything related to personal finance and also negotiation. And then I do workshops around negotiation as well.
Do you help people if they're going from a job to another job, or if they've been in a job for a long time and just want to raise within?
I do both. Yeah, we do negotiation for raises at your current job or for starting salaries at another job.
And where do you see that people have the most success? Is it usually typically better if they just leave and can negotiate better elsewhere?
My lovely friends at Bitches Get Riches, they actually did a whole piece about this, about is it better financially for you to be loyal to a company or for you to quote unquote job hop? And job hopping wins every time, because you have more power at the start of a negotiation, at the start of your job, than you will ever have again. Even if you've been at that company for 50 years, you have more power when you're starting at an organization than you will ever do during your tenure there. So we want you negotiating. I mean, we want you negotiating always negotiating raises. But the thing that's really going to catapult your career is making sure that you're taking every offer that's you know, that makes sense for you, especially since most likely you will be increasingly more valuable every time you switch jobs.
So for someone who's thinking about switching jobs, can you give some tips on what they should look for, what they should ask for, how they should approach it, or things they should research?
Yeah, just as far as best practices. Yeah. I mean, I would say walk in with really, really good interview questions. I've actually posted this on my blog as well as my Instagram about really good questions to ask your interviewee. But you want to ask, what is the review process like here? There are some companies that actually don't have a review process, right? And so like, how will I expect to get feedback in this role? Ask about the culture, ask about the requirements for this job. What can somebody do to really be successful in this role? That's a great question to ask. So you're really trying to gauge not only the culture, but you're looking at how am I going to be able to add value to the organization in this role? And then how am I going to be compensated fairly for adding that value? And what I tell people around negotiating, I won't get into the actual script. Come take my workshop for that. Yes. But I talk about negotiations are collaborations, not conflicts. And too many people think negotiations are battles, right? I'm going to have to put on my boxing gloves. I'm going to have to unsheath my sword. And we're going to have to fight it out in order for me to prove my worth. That is not a negotiation. That is an argument. That is a fight. That is not a collaborative process. So it is not you versus your employer or you versus your potential employer when you're negotiating. It's actually both of you on the same team trying to fight the problem of you being compensated fairly, right? So if the problem is you are currently not being compensated fairly or the offer is not your market rate, you are working with your boss to fight that issue.
Do you have any tips for women specifically? Because I feel like, you know, when men enter a negotiation and when women enter a negotiation, there's a very different mindset. Mm-hmm. And I've heard you talk about it before, and I'd love for you to talk it on this episode. What tips you can help provide, especially since a lot of my listeners are female, like getting out of their own way and just going in there and getting what they deserve?
So yeah, the script I talk about in my coaching and workshops is actually very much tailored to women. And it's specifically because there's certain, whether we like it or not, there are certain biases that people have against women negotiating. So we actually turn those on their heads and use that to our advantage when we're negotiating. The biggest thing is actually an alarming statistic that I talk about in my workshop, which is that women are statistically better negotiators when they act as though they're negotiating on behalf of someone they care about. We are very, very bad at negotiating and fighting for our own worth because so many of us have been told that we're not worthy. So statistically speaking, we're actually better negotiators. We perform better in a negotiation when we're acting as though we're fighting for our best friend or for our partner or for our child or for our sibling. So when you're approaching a negotiation scenario, in your head, act as though you're fighting for your favorite person. Act as though you're mama bearing for that favorite person, right? And you're going to be more successful in that negotiation when you're framing it as like you hyping up someone else.
I'm not surprised by that statistic at all, but
I'm not surprised either, but it sucks and I hate it.
It really does. It's so true. And I know so many, even just friends that I have that hate their job or they make excuses. I've been at fault for this. And we feel like, oh, because we have families or we have kids that we might not find a job that's better or that's more amenable or is flexible. And we make these excuses. So if someone were to come to you with that kind of situation, what would you tell them?
Where they're making excuses for not being able to negotiate.
Yeah, or just if they get stuck in a job because they feel like they have a lot of flexibility, maybe because they have kids at home and that a lot of employers aren't as flexible and they have a good work-life balance, quote unquote, whatever that means. And so they're afraid to really see what they're actually worth because they don't want to rock the boat.
This is the tough love. You have to remember that at the end of the day, you are an employee of that company. And although they may treat you well, although you may be a valued employee to them, you are still at the end of the day an employee. And just like an employer is not going to have any sort of qualms about letting you go, about firing you, about laying you off, if it means that their business will be more valuable because of it, or that they'll, you know, save money because of it, or because it's necessary, you need to think the same thing when approaching an employer or when considering what your next move is. A company at the end of the day has no loyalty to you. And that's really sad, but you cannot have loyalty then either. A job is a job. If they didn't pay you, you wouldn't show up, right? Mm-hmm. And so you have to think about if this job is not seeing your value, and if they're not willing to have a conversation with you about compensation, they will not see your value for your entire tenure of your employment there. So even if there's great benefits, even if there's things that you're like, oh, I can't get this anywhere else, I can assure you that you can get it somewhere else, and usually you can get it back tenfold. So I have so many people, not only in my business, but in my life, who, yeah, tell me like, oh, this job treats me so well, but I know I'm significantly underpaid, or I know I get sexist comments said to me at work, but it's fine. I'll just tough it out because the benefits are great. I promise you that there's another job out there whose benefits are great and you don't get shit said to you at work.
I'm just curious because I've heard this. I have not experienced this, but for older women and even men who are getting up there and who technically get the quote unquote higher salaries, and let's say they get let go, or they have a really hard time finding new jobs because of ageism. And so a lot of them I've spoken to that are worried about leaving their job, even though they know it's not the best, but they don't necessarily have a large retirement and they need a job to just ride it out and they settle. What would you say to
that? Oh, that one's hard, both because that's not really my clientele. If I'm being honest, I don't want to give an answer. Okay. I'm working largely with early to mid-career women, and I wouldn't want to be disingenuous and act as though I know what that feels like, because I don't. I have had ageism in my own right, but usually because I'm young, mm-hmm. right? I've always been the youngest employee at any job I've ever held. I've been the youngest employee in the company and have had my own, you know, ageist thing said to me, but of course it's the exact opposite. Like, you're young, what do you know? So I don't want to give an answer that's disingenuous, but I would always say that if you do not feel like you are being valued, whether that's in a organization, in a relationship, in any sort of situation, if you do not feel like you're being valued, you have to have the self-worth. You have to have enough self-worth to realize that and to find a better option for you.
I really appreciate that, because I have colleagues who have expressed that to me, and I honestly have no idea what to tell them, because I fortunately don't know what it's like to be at an older age and worry about supporting my family and feel stuck.
Right.
I just...
Well, and I'm getting calls now from women in their 50s or in their early 60s, and they're telling me, you know, I just went through a divorce and I don't have any of my own money. Or I know I should have been saving for retirement sooner, but now I feel like it's too late. And I will never tell them, of course, that everything's going to be fine. Because yeah, that is really mm-hmm. scary. I'm also not going to tell them that, well, all hope is lost, like, go have fun. Like, that's not it either. Right? The day you start investing, or the day you start seeing your value in an organization, and the day you start standing up for yourself is the best day, because you didn't start tomorrow. Right? So if that is you and you're currently in a situation where you don't want to be there anymore, or if you are, maybe you didn't invest, or maybe you quote unquote didn't invest enough, and now you're trying to play catch up and you're wondering, how am I going to do this? Applaud yourself for realizing that, because too many people get to the end of their lives and they wish they would have made a change sooner. So value that you are conscious of that, because that is huge. And then don't ignore it. Do something about it. If you know you're not in a great situation, if you know you no longer want to be there, take the steps you have to take in order to get out of it.
So sort of on a side note, I am very curious on your perspective of what you would tell someone who, let's say they're in their 30s or 40s, they're mid-level career, give or take, they have kids, but they have a ton of debt. Do you encourage them to pay down their debt first, or do you encourage them to save more, or some form of hybrid? What would you tell someone in that situation?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's a great question, but it's totally arbitrary. And I get asked that question a lot, like people slide into my DMs on Instagram, and I'm going to tell you what I tell them, which is, I don't know, because I haven't seen your personal situation. Right. So, and that's, and this is going to sound like me just trying to sell my coaching, but truly, like, I don't know how much debt you have. I don't know what your financial goals are. I don't know exactly what your age is. And do you have kids, and what, you know, when are you expected to retire, and what do you make? All of these are factors, right? If you have a, you know, substantial amount of credit card debt, that's different than a substantial amount of student loan debt. Those are two very, very different things. So it honestly depends on your situation, but the kind of, for me, the end all be all is that the number one goal is an emergency fund. I will tell that to anybody. Yeah. That's my number one piece of advice, is an emergency fund trumps investing. It trumps paying off debt. It trumps buying a house. It trumps everything. You have to have an emergency fund to cover you in case something happens, right? Because if you have debt, we don't want you slipping into more debt trying to pay for an emergency. Or if you are debt free, we don't want you going into debt trying to pay for an emergency. So the end all be all for me, the, like, do not pass go, do not collect $200, is the emergency fund.
Yeah, I agree with that too. People always ask me, like, should I be saving in a 401k, or should I be paying down debt, or this or that? And 100% agree, it's a very case by case basis. But just for my own peace of mind, I want to know that if my employer did let me go tomorrow, that we're not scrambling, or that our kids have food on the table, or in case the hot water heater blows up, or, you know, whatever can happen, that we can still sleep at night and not have to worry about finances. Well, Tori, is there anything else, that any tips or mindset that you'd want to instill in my listeners?
Oh, gosh. I mean, just know your value and don't be afraid to fight for it, because there's so many amazing opportunities out there, and you just have to demand those opportunities. And I'll send you a bunch of resources that you can link in the show notes around different money tools I use, or coaching or workshops if you want to work with me in that way. But that's my favorite thing in the world, is being able to really sit down with you and come up with a plan so you don't feel so lost or so confused anymore about money or about negotiating. So yeah, thanks so much for having me on.
Well, before we do go, I would like to go into our lightning round. This is where I ask my guests the same four questions every week. So, Tori, are you ready?
I am ready.
Question number one is, what is one fun fact about you that not many people know?
Fun fact about me. I am pretty transparent on my Instagram. So, like, all of the fun facts of, like, I love Popeye's fried chicken more than anything. If you follow me on Instagram for longer than 2 weeks, you'll figure that out very quickly. Fun fact that not a lot of people know about me. It's a good one. It's supposed to be lightning round, and of course I can't think of it.
That's good.
I mean, I talk about this on Instagram too, but I have almost 20 plants, and they're all named. Oh, cool. And I love them very, very much. The most recent addition to the plant family is Keith. And Keith is this, like, luscious green philodendron, and he looks amazing. I'm literally staring at him while I'm talking about it. I love Keith.
Do you have specific plants or all kinds of plants that you're interested in?
I have all kinds of plants, but most of them are the easy to take care of ones, because I overlove them and overwater them, and I've definitely killed off quite a few. So yeah, they tend to be the easier ones.
I've never heard that answer before. Very, very creative. Well, question number two is, who inspires you the most and why?
I mean, my parents have been really amazing, just role models to me, especially financially. And I wouldn't be able to do this had I not had that guidance. So that was pretty impactful for me. As far as someone I don't know or someone famous, Elizabeth Gilbert's work has been hugely impactful in my life. For those of you who are not familiar, she wrote Eat, Pray, Love, Big Magic, among other things. But I've seen her speak twice. I actually met her a fluke thing outside of the first speaking event I saw her at. And just her work has been so, so impactful in the way I see the world and in the way I coach. And yeah, she's amazing.
Great. And question number three is, what book are you reading now or have read that you loved and recommend?
I am reading Provenance right now.
What's that?
And it is about, this is so funny because I literally gave the fun fact about the plants and the book I'm reading last night on my Instagram captions. This is so funny. We're talking about both. I am big into grifters and into con men. I find them incessantly fascinating. I love a good con story. And of course, not because people got conned, because that's terrible, but I just think it's so fascinating. They're like Catch Me If You Can and Elizabeth Holmes and Anna Delvey. So this one is all about an art forgery business that happened in 90s Britain. And it's so, so interesting about this con artist, the sociopath who tasked this artist who had never gotten his own big break to create these paintings. And by the time he realized that he was committing a felony, he was in too deep. And so, yeah, I'm about halfway through the book. It's very, very interesting. It's called Provenance.
Is it based on a true story?
Yeah, it is. It is a nonfiction book. It's written by two reporters who covered the story. And yeah, it is so, so, so interesting.
Ooh, I'll have to check that out. Thank you.
Yeah.
Hey, and the last question, which you kind of answered, but what is one actionable tip or piece of advice that you can tell our moms out there to help them on their financial independence journey?
I would say automate your savings. That's my number one thing I want you to take away, is that you can start changing your financial life completely on autopilot just by saying, okay, I want 5% of my paycheck or $500 automatically put into savings. So you don't have to think about it and you don't have to worry about it. It's just going to grow automatically.
Yeah, that was the best advice I got when I was in my early 20s as well, was set up some automatic savings, invest in low-cost index funds, and then you'll thank me when you're ready to retire.
Put on autopilot.
Awesome. Well, Tori, thank you so much for coming on today. It's really been a pleasure. How can my listeners connect with you further?
Thank you so much for having me. I am her first 100K online, HERFIRST100K.com. And you can find me at her first 100K on all the socials. Like I said, Instagram, I'm way cooler on Instagram, as I like to say. But yeah, that's where the most of my community is. But come and say hi, ask me any questions that you have. Again, this is my favorite thing to do, and I'm just honored I get to talk about it and honored I get to help women across the country.
Well, thank you for sharing your story and your message today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Oh my goodness, how amazing is Tori? Wasn't she phenomenal? Definitely go check out her website, herfirst100k.com. I'll put a link in the show notes as long as the tools and resources that she mentioned. But I hope you took notes. And if you are looking for a change or looking to get more wealth, but you like your profession, just follow her tips. She is spot on with her advice and just listen to her confidence. She knows her stuff. It was such a pleasure interviewing her. And I hope you enjoyed the episode as much as I did, because again, Tori was just on fire. And so before we wrap up, I just want to remind you, if you haven't already checked out, if you go to investormama.com, I have a free resource for you called the 19 Tips for Navigating Money in Your Relationship. I know talking about money with your significant other, or honestly, anyone that's close to you, can be difficult. And this is a great guide just to help you start the conversation and just some tips on how to navigate it. And if you're not even sure on how to even open it up with your spouse or partner or whomever, just say, hey, I was listening to this podcast. This girl, Jen, was talking about how talking about money with someone that you love is very important. And I first, I thought it was all hokey and stuff, but then I don't know, what do you think? And just use it like that. Like, use me as a scapegoat. But the most important thing is to actually start having these money conversations. It is so critical. It is so important. And so definitely check out this guide. And finally, if you enjoy today's episode and other Investor Mama content, please go to the platform that you are listening to this on and please subscribe, leave a written review or a ranking. It is super helpful and lets the content providers know you're finding value with my content. Well, all right. This is Investor Mama. I will see you next week.
Thanks for listening to the Investor Mama podcast. If you like today's episode, please support us by clicking subscribe on the platform you are currently listening to, leaving a comment or awesome review, and spreading the wealth and sharing this podcast with friends and family or on social media. Don't forget to check out investormama.com to connect with our community and sign up for our email. Stay tuned for next week's episode.